is a story that I've said over before, but I love this story so much. It just tells me so much about who he was. Rav Huttner was once with the altar of Slobodka. This is Rav Yitzchak Huttner when he was still younger, much younger. He was with the altar, and there was a distinguished group of people that were with him. That included Rav Avram Grudzinski. He was with Mashkiach Slobodka, the altar's sons, along with the Rav Avram Kaplan of Berlin. There was a bunch of tzaddikim sitting together. This is before World War II, after World War I. The altar asked Rav Kaplan to tell him a pleasing mida. He said, "You were in Berlin? Tell me a pleasing mida that you have seen in Germany. Tell me something that you liked, that you appreciated when you were in Germany." So Kaplan said that Germany is very refined and that their language is very humble and subjugating. So when a person would talk to them, for example, if you asked a question, nobody would ever assert that they know the answer. It wouldn't be that you'd say to them, "This is the answer." That's not what you would do. They would say to you, like for example, if you ask them a question, where is a supermarket? They would say, "It's down the block, isn't it?" They would end the answer with a question, as if to say, like, "I'm not sure either, let's try to work on this together." In German, it was nicht wahr. "It's down the block, nicht wahr?" "It's down the block, that's where it should be." But that's the way they would answer. Instead of saying something there, it indicates that the person answering himself is unsure of how to answer the question, as if, "I'm not positive how to be able to state this." So that was something that he found as a refined mida. A huge argument broke out. Rav Grudzinski called this lo sechaneim. Lo sechaneim is the lav that you're not allowed to bring favor or speak out different tovos that non-Jews have. It's lo sechaneim. You're saying something favorable about people that they're never going to give something back to you. You can't talk about non-Jews in that way. And the altar agreed. He said, "You're right." Took back his question. He said, maybe you can't learn something like that. One bacher that was standing there disagreed. He disagreed. He said, "Of course you could." And he defended the idea. He said, "This is a tremendous mida. One certainly can learn a lesson from non-Jews. One certainly can learn this type of lesson." And that was that. He acted with a bit of chutzpah in the face of the altar of Grudzinski and all the other gedolim there. But the altar didn't flinch. The altar was not like that, not when it came to his midos. He didn't flinch when it came to such a thing. Rav Huttner did not forget many things. Ever read Pachad Yitzchak? There's not much that Rav Huttner forgot. Years later, he was preparing a shir in Chaim Berlin, in the yeshiva Chaim Berlin, where he's Rosh Shiva, when a man knocked on the door. So he's wearing a trench coat, even though it was a very hot day in the middle of the summer, but he's wearing a long trench coat. The Rav tried pushing him off. He said, "Listen, I'll get to you later. I've got to finish up this shir before I give it." But the man insisted he had to talk to him right now. He said, "Okay." Brought him in, and the man said, "You don't recognize me?" So Rav Huttner looked at him. He said he did not. He had no idea. But then he looked again and he saw, "You're the bacher. You're that bacher that argued with the altar, Rav Grudzinski, all those years ago. When we argued all that time, you're the bacher that had that." So the man then removed his coat and he showed that he had a prosthetic arm. His arm had been cut off and he had a prosthetic arm. So he said, "I was in the Holocaust. I was among those who were in Dr. Mengele's pain group, the ones that were..." Dr. Mengele, unfortunately, that was a massive Russian, his infamous pain experiments, where he would do things without Novocaine, without any type of anesthetic. He would go ahead and do pain on you and see how far he could go before you would die. So one of the things that he did is that he was amputating his arm, this man's arm. And as he was doing it, he said to the man, "This hurts, nicht wahr? You feel a lot of pain, nicht wahr?" And he said, "You know I am doing this to you, nicht wahr? You're Jewish, nicht wahr?" And he kept saying it. The man realized that the reason why he felt this was happening is that he felt he had done chutzpah in front of Rav Huttner, in front of the altar, in front of Rav Grudzinski, and he wanted to be forgiven. He wanted to get mechila. Unfortunately, by this time, years and years later, nobody was alive from that original group. The only one alive was Rav Huttner. So he wanted to ask mechila from Rav Huttner on behalf of the group. Said he'd get his mechila for what he had done, for speaking up in front of those rabbeim that were wiser than he, and get the punishment that he had. So the question you get from a story like that is, how in the world could any human being treat another human being like that? How is that possible? How is it possible that a person could be that evil? There are obviously sick people in this world, but they say about Mengele that he was an innocent and caring man, intelligent in all different ways, in everything else that he did. But when it came to this, when it came to what he did to Jews and anybody like the Jews, he was horrific. He wasn't a human being. Supposedly loved children, very kind to other people, maybe even been to animals. You just didn't never imagine him to be such a monster. So how does that happen? And really, this question is not just about him. This question really is, could be said about any similar type of group. Types of groups that allow you to kill or destroy or maim or to show your anger toward other people. Let's go with the KKK or any other similar type of group that does evil things to other people. How could a person do this? How in the world could a person become like this? The answer may be that when a person sees other people as fellow animals, just a heightened chimpanzee, just a little bit higher than all that, just a Darwinian principle that would be a little bit further up, an animal for one's amusement. Well, that takes away some of the chumras that I might have on myself, not to treat another person that way. He's just an animal. And the same way that I step on ants and I have absolutely no problem with it, same way I'll use an animal for whatever I want with it, why can't I use this person in that way? If I'm curious or if I want to know something. Maybe Dr. Mengele honestly thought that this was going to help the medical field in some way, the medical practice. He hadn't been able to, because of the laws, to be able to use it in human beings, to try these experiments out in human beings. Maybe he felt this was going to be something better. This is going to be something greater. I don't fully understand the effect that a person like Charles Darwin had on the entire world. I don't really understand entirely what he did and how he was so much different than the other people at his time. There's something that he was zocha to, and I say that in sort of the air quotes way, in which obviously this is not a schus, where he changed the world for the worse. He made a world that treated human beings as human beings into an animal world where animals treat other animals the way that they want to be treated. That's strange, but that's the idea. And I understand the line of Scholl of Amsterdam. Rav Scholl of Amsterdam said that had Darwin ever seen a person like Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he never would have said that we're related to apes in any which way. He never would have said it. Because you see a human being like Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, you couldn't believe that there's another person like that. What makes us different and more special than any other animal is one thing. It's something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gifted to us, whether we realize it or not. It's a Tzelem Elokim. Now, Tzelem Elokim cannot be understood in the simple point that a person looks like the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted him to look, so to speak, an image of what God looks like. Because in that sense, animals have that look as well. You think about it, we can't even imagine an animal to have any other type of a face other than eyes here, nose here, mouth there, ears there, in the basic form or structure of the animal face. Granted, it could be that the animal doesn't have ears like a snake, or that the nose is in a little bit of a different direction. Sense of smell is in the tongue. But the basic face of a snake is a human being's with different parts put in different places. It still looks the same. You look at a snake face, it's not horribly different from a regular human being face. They all look the same. And the truth is, that's true about almost every animal, every mammal, bird, almost the bugs in that way. Granted, there are spiders with more eyes than two. But it's still the same basic structure. The eyes are there, the mouth is there. It looks the same way. There are only certain types of fish, like certain types of sea cucumbers or things like that, that might not have the same look that normal human beings look. But if you say that Tzelem Elokim is just, we all look the same, that we all have the same, but that applies to animals as well. That's not what Tzelem Elokim is. Tzelem Elokim means we were given a neshama. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence is within us. And then whenever we want to tap back into that presence, when we want to get back to where that presence is, we have the ability to do so, whether it's through davening, through our learning, or something else. Chesed has the ability to do that. When we want to tap back, we want to go back to see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us, it's there. There is something, there's a connection to the Creator within us that allows us to get close. And that Tzelem Elokim, that Tzelem Elokim is something that whenever you see a human being, you're not seeing just a human being. You are seeing the Shekhinah together with the human being. When you look at an animal, you're seeing an animal. That's all you're seeing. A squirrel is a squirrel. There's nothing more to it. A dog is a dog. And an ape is an ape. It's an ape. What these bones or structures of some humanoid creature, it's an ape. It's an ape. It looks a little bit more than a like a human than an orangutan does. But it's an ape. Human beings were created with that neshama, that tselem elokim that makes us different. As the Mishnah in Perkei Avos says, Perkei Mishnah Yud Dalet, Chaviv Adam Shenevra B'Tselem. We should be so happy. We're beloved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because we have this tselem. Chaviv Chiba Yisariya Nodas Lo Shenevra B'Tselem. Since we're created with a tselem, there's an extra little bit of love. When the Ben Ish Chai first made his trip to Eretz Yisrael from Baghdad, it's the first time he ever came to Eretz Yisrael. He had been with a caravan. The caravan was the safest way to travel because there were Bedouin Arabs that were going throughout the desert, marauding Arabs that if you were caught by yourself, they had more weapons than you did, they would kill you, take all your stuff, and leave you for dead. If they killed you, you were easily left for dead. So either way, but they would kill you and that was it. So you couldn't travel without a caravan. You couldn't go by yourself. So the Ben Ish Chai went together with an entire caravan. As they were nearing a certain area, it was Friday, getting toward the afternoon, and they saw, the caravan saw, that they were coming into an extremely dangerous part of the desert. A part of the desert where they knew there were these Bedouin Arabs, and they had a bunch of them around, and it could be that there were more of them than it was of the caravan. They said, we can't stay here. We got to keep going. So the Ben Ish Chai turned to them. It was late. It was Friday. It's toward the afternoon. He turned to them. He said, we can't go. We can't do this. It's going to be Shabbos soon. We have to stay here. Church of the people said, Rabbi, we understand, but this is an extremely dangerous situation. It's sakanas nefashos. If we stay in this area, then we're all going to be killed. We can't stay here. So the Ben Ish Chai, I don't know what the psak is. The Ben Ish Chai obviously is beyond anything. But the Ben Ish Chai turned to them and said, you can go, because you feel it's sakana. I'm on my way to Eretz Yisrael. It's a mitzvah, shlucha mitzvah, and nizokin. I'm not worried. It's not going to happen. They said, Rebbe, shlucha mitzvah, and nizokin, unless it's makom sakana. He said, I don't think the mitzvah is going to protect me. I'm not worried. If you want to stay with me, you can stay with me. Otherwise, everybody go ahead. They said, Rebbe, we don't want to leave you. But the caravan said, we can't. We feel this is the sacrifice of our lives. We can't. So they left the Ben Ish Chai there. The Ben Ish Chai was there with two of his shamashim, two people that served him. And one of the Arabs stayed back with them to be able to help him find his way back. When everything that the Arab wasn't worried. The Arab knew how to hide. So the Arab said, I'll be there. He sat down. They made their tent, made their camp and everything. And they got ready for Shabbos. They got ready as much as they could for Shabbos. They took out their food, they took out their stuff. The Ben Ish Chai lit candles, had them lit throughout the entire tent. And they sat down, they had Kabbalah Shabbos, they had Mariv, they ate their meal. Afterward, they darshaned in Torah, and eventually the two men fell asleep. The Arab went off a little bit to go watch. He said, you've got to turn off the lights. Ben Ish Chai said, I can't turn off the lights. He said, I'll turn off the lights for you. Ben Ish Chai said, you don't have to turn off the lights. Don't worry about it. The Arab said, you don't understand. They'll see you from far away. It's in the middle of nowhere. They're going to see that a light's on. They're going to come toward you. Ben Ish Chai said, you don't have to worry. So the Arab went away. He said, I'm not going anywhere near this. He went further away. Soon, he heard noise. Right? He couldn't see anything. It's late at night. The moon wasn't out yet. But he heard the noise. And then he heard it getting closer and closer. It was horses, three horses coming by. He saw the three horses. They came up to the tent right where the Ben Ish Chai was. Right? They saw the light. And one of them, the leader of those three Arabs, he got down off of his horse, right, took his sword in his hand, unsheathed his sword, and went straight into the tent that was filled with light. The Arab held his breath. Then he heard a clatter. Sword fell to the ground. The Arab ran, jumped on top of his horse, ran away. The other two Bedouins looked at each other. What's going on? They jumped off their horses. They went toward the tent with their swords drawn. They walked inside, exact same thing happened. Jumped back on top of their horses, ran away. Now, the Arab was wondering, what's going on here? So he went up to that, he crept up to the tent, right? And he slowly peered inside of the tent. You know what he saw? Such a Ben Ish Chai story. The candles had gone out. The glow had been from the Ben Ish Chai's face. He had seen the Ben Ish Chai's face. We have no idea how much of a schus we had, and I'm comparing this to what we said last week, what it means to see the Chafetz Chaim's face in a video. We don't realize how awesome that is. To have caught the exact picture and to get that picture to be able to put on people's walls. We get to see his face, his real face, what it really looked like. We have the ability to see Gedolim even nowadays. In the Gedolim of yesterday, we have the ability to see these faces, even though pictures were assured for years, years, pictures of human beings. Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz has a whole tshuva on how it's assur gomer to have any pictures of any Gedolim, of anybody up there. Nothing. You can't see it. But to nowadays, we need it. We need Rebbe cards. We need pictures of Gedolim on the walls. We need to see their faces, to see what a real Tzelem Elokim is all about. The Ben Ish Chai, the Baba Sali used to touch the Ben Ish Chai's picture and say, this is the greatest beard that has ever been made since the beginning of man. The Ben Ish Chai's long, brown, luxurious beard. You feel like it's a soft beard. I don't think we're going to touch it. But you feel like that. What a beard. What a person. That Tzelem Elokim that's there. So Victor Miller used to tell people in his 10 Steps to Greatness that one of the steps to becoming a greater person is by looking at a person and trying to find that Tzelem Elokim. To see it in everyone. No matter who he is, no matter what he's done, no matter what he's done to you. You look at a person and you find a Tzelem Elokim. And every single day, you take one person, somebody that you look at, and you see not a monkey, not just another animal that's out there. You see a human being with a Tzelem Elokim. And you see it, it changes everything. Rav Avraham Grzesinski, the same Rav Avraham Grzesinski from before, was in the ghetto. He was very sick, so he was brought to the hospital. His Talmidim were able to visit him. And they saw that he was crying, sitting there crying in the hospital. So they said, what can we do? Rebbe, what can we do? He said, are you sick? Are you hurt? Can we get you some medicine? He shook his head, but he couldn't speak. He said, the war. What's going on outside? Everything that's happening with the ghettos and everything. The Holocaust. Of what, at that time, they knew very little. Shook his head. Finally, he was able to speak. And he said, no. It's because the Germans have a Tzelem Elokim and they're losing it. These Nazis, Yimach Shemom, they don't have a Tzelem Elokim anymore. They're becoming more animal than they are human being. Rav Avraham was able to look at a person and see the Tzelem Elokim in every human being, but he couldn't see it in some of these Nazis. He couldn't find it there. They're no longer human beings. It's almost gone. What are you going to do with such people? They're not people. That's what he was crying about. So let's try it. To try to look at everybody we see. Not everybody. Let's do one person a day. Take that one person and say, that is a Tzelem Elokim. That is the image of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants in this world. That is a special person. It'll change our attitude toward that person. It hopefully will change our attitude toward almost everybody. And eventually it'll get us to understand that we ourselves have that Tzelem Elokim. We should do nothing to lose it, nothing to ruin the Tzelem that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. Have a great week, everybody.